Hello everyone, my name is Mike Matusik. I am an Office 365 technology specialist. So my purpose in life is to discuss Office 365, those two seats are open, with our customers. I actually live here in Houston, so a number of you know me, have seen me before. I'm sorry, but for the rest of you who don't, I've been with Microsoft about 14 years. I say about because on the 27th of this month is when I hit 14 years. And then I've principally been focused on technologies related to, are we started recording or do I need to start over? Do you know? Okay. Just keep going. So today what we're going to talk about is Office 365 Pro Plus. So Office 365 Pro Plus is Office 2013 as delivered from the cloud. So the UI still says Office 2013. Everything you do still says 2013. However, it's mildly different. And by the end of tomorrow, you'll understand how it's mildly different. And then the ways that we have to deploy it, to administer it, to update it, to troubleshoot it, and all of those parts and pieces. So here's the agenda. It's done in gray so you can see it. So we're going to start with Pro Plus, and we're going to do a lab configuration. So we're good. All right. So the lab configuration that we're going to do in the first session is really we're just going to understand what DirSync is, what identities are, those type of things. We'll actually get that stood up. So as you have your sheets, go ahead and get logged in and get that lab building, because it does take about 30 minutes for it to build all the virtual machines and provision everything so you can use these. And then you can take these with you and continue to use them over the next few days. I think they'd last for, like, I think it's 7 or 10 days, but it may last longer than that. So we have a number of tracks. I'll go back, and I'm presenting on all of them. The tracks that we're going to cover is Office 365 Pro Plus. Then right after this session, we're going to do the deployment part one session, and then we're going to talk about deployments, different choices, different options, different methodologies. Part two, we're actually going to do some deployments with tools. So we'll be dealing with group policy and System Center. So you don't have to just do the cloud model. You can use a standard image or methodology that you're using today to do your deployments. And that'll be bright and early tomorrow morning. And then we're going to talk about managing updates, because we do manage updates different with Office 365 Pro Plus as opposed to Office 2013. So 2013 is the standard, Windows update methodology. Office Pro Plus just uses the cloud methodology, and we'll talk about that in great detail in a little bit. Right. Then we're going to talk about the telemetry dashboard. So the telemetry dashboard is a brand new component of Office 365, which allows you to gather information on what your environment is, because before you can do the upgrade from whatever version of Office you have to Office 360, am I okay? Office 365 Pro Plus, then You need a bit of information about your environment. Most of us don't know, including us. We didn't know at Microsoft, right? Who's using what, where, when, why, how. This will help you gather that information so you can go solve those problems, right? Because you still have to do your app compat. You still have to do your checks. You still have to do, fix broken add-ins, all those types of things. You still have to do a lot of that. So that doesn't go away. We don't solve that problem for you. And then at the end of this session, we're actually going to do a DirSync lab. So today we will actually set up DirSync, and we'll actually do a DirSync instance. So let's talk about Office 365 Pro Plus. So things have changed dramatically in the world as of late, right? Wasn't that long ago, most of us just had a single device, right? It may have been, a desktop at work. Or, some of us who are in IT, we always had laptops because we always had to take our work home with us. Or you may have had a home computer. But now things have evolved, and they've evolved rapidly to where we are today, right? Everyone has typically a machine at work, They also have a machine at home. They carry a machine in their pocket, right? So, you know, you may have an iPhone, you may have a Windows phone, you may have an iPad, right? You may have an array of devices. Most of us who are in IT have three or more, right? What's the highest number of devices anyone have in here? Eight? Not bad. Not bad. I think you beat me because I cap out at like six. I carry five in my backpack at any given time. So, yeah, but we're IT, right? This is what we do. We're nerdy. But that's the world that is today, and things have evolved to that stage. The way we communicate has rapidly evolved. So in the past, we simply typically would communicate via phone, or we communicate through email, right, or face-to-face. Face-to-face hasn't really changed too much other than we don't really look at each other anymore. We do face-to-face like this. But the communications and how they've evolved has rapidly changed, right? It's hard to believe that 7 years ago, you know, this just came out, right, and this dramatically changed the world. Because prior to that, we thought of everything as a computer, and that was the world according to Microsoft, right? And then it changed rapidly, and we've recently caught up because we've embraced all the devices. It wasn't that long ago, right? We would have said, there's one device, and that's ours, right? And then the heck with everyone else, just, you know, firewall them off, and we'll make them go away. That's not the case anymore. And then the way we communicate. We expect all of our devices to work with all of our other devices. And we expect that information to be ubiquitous between those devices. So as we go from device to device to device, we expect them all to be in sync. We expect them all to have the same data. And we expect them all to work wherever they are. Right? And that's kind of the premise of Office 365, is to take you as a person, provide you the tools that you need to communicate and collaborate from anywhere with any device and do that in a secure fashion. So our envision behind that is obviously Office 365 and Office 365 Pro Plus. So in the past we have, or actually even today, anyone here deployed Office 2013, the standard on-premises Office 2013? Okay. So that methodology still works. It's still a great product. It uses the method you've always known and loved. You know, we're going to talk about some different techniques coming up. But this still works and functions wonderfully well. Next, we get into the Office 365 Pro Plus. So that includes not only the Office that we know and love, right, in a little different fashion, but it also includes the capability of all of our mobile devices. So now we've pulled in our mobile phones, we've pulled in tablets, right? We've pulled in other devices to participate in this new world. And then Office 365 kind of brings in all the other components. So the Office 365 Beyond Pro Plus brings in the cloud email, brings in that cloud collaboration with SharePoint, brings in that cloud communications with Link, and we're coupling all of those parts and pieces together to give you that seamless experience from any device in any location in a secure fashion. And we're doing that across an array of devices. So we don't have all of them, right? There's, you know, a couple of devices that we don't cover yet, but we're working on, you know, nearly all of them. So what's the difference? So on this side, you'll see we have Office 365 Pro Plus. It's a click-to-run installation. Anyone familiar with click-to-run, how click-to-run works? A couple of you, most of you not, good. So I can lie to you and you won't know. It does a streaming install, the product updates, how the product updates occur, right? I have a session completely built around that. We're going to get into deep detail, but it's different than what you're accustomed to. And it does require online activation. You have to provide a username and password or some method of that to use Office 365 Pro Plus. Without that, you can only use it for 5 days, and then it'll stop working. Well, it won't stop working. It'll go to reduced functionality mode. Office 2013 Pro Plus is still the MSI install, standard MSI build. You customize it with the OCT, Office Customization Tool, and you do everything the way you've always done it. It's a traditional install, the same way you've always done it, same methodologies, still done through the Big Bang Service Pack methodologies, right? So you get the big Office install. 8 months later, you get Service Pack 1. 8 months later, you get Service Pack 2, right? And then so on and so on. In Office 365 Pro Plus, our cadence is not the big install, 8 months later, you get Service Pack 1. We RTM, and they mentioned that this morning on stage, we RTM a version of Office every month. Every month, there is a new version of Office 365 Pro Plus. There's a particular reason why we call it Office 365 Pro Plus and not Office 2013. Because hypothetically, another version of Office that on premises would be called 2015, hypothetically, right? We would still call it Office 365 Pro Plus. And by the time it would release on premises, all of that's already been done in the cloud because we're doing it bit by bit by bit. So instead of getting one big chunk, right, and then you're having to do one big update, who here is still running Office 2007? Somebody is. All right. 2010, the majority. All right. Anyone still got three? Come on. There you go. There's always one. No problem. Shockingly enough, I used to cover state and local government, and there was an organization in this general vicinity that we might be sitting in that still ran Exchange 5.5. So, just saying. 10 years after we said, you know, this is done, you know, we haven't security patched it for 10 years, they were still running. Don't know what city that would have been. But what are the commonalities between those, between the different versions of Office Pro Plus and Office 365 Pro Plus? So the extensibility is still the same. Group policy management is still the same, right? It's still a local install. Even though we say it's streaming, it's still a resident local app. You actually put the bits on the machine, and it runs locally. So if you do not have network connectivity, it still runs. Right? So if there's no network, I used to say if you're on an airplane, but pretty much airplanes have Wi-Fi now. But if you're in a location that does not have network, this is fine. It works just fine. It launches just fine. And then the telemetry dashboard. The telemetry dashboard works whether you're on-premises or you're in the cloud. And then we actually have a whole session around the telemetry dashboard. So what's unique about Office 365 Pro Plus? So Office 365 Pro Plus is licensed per user. So as a user, you're licensed for a copy of Office 365 Pro Plus. And that copy actually gives you rights to consume 5 rich copies, PC or Mac, 5 tablet devices, iPads, it's the only one we've classified as a tablet so far, right? And 5 mobile devices. That's Android, iPhone, and Windows Phone. So in reality, you can consume 15 versions of Office with one license. Now, that's vastly different than what it is for the other version of Office. So Office 2013, and this rule has always been the same, but no one ever followed it, is it's one copy of Office for one device. You had 2 devices, those 2 copies of Office. Now, HUP, Home Use Program, changed that a little bit, right? Gave you a little bit of rights to take your work copy and use it at home, assuming you were doing less than 10% work and you weren't running a business, blah, 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 blah. But that provided you to have a second copy at home. But you couldn't run them concurrently or simultaneously. That wasn't allowed. Office 365 Pro Plus gives you that ability to load Office on an array of devices and use that on an array of devices. So that could be a work computer. It can be a work laptop. It can be a work Mac. It can be a home Mac. And it can be a, you know, PC at mom's house, because you go there regularly, right? And that would be your 5 instances. And we'll actually talk about what do you do when you have a 6th? How do you manage that? The experience does traverse across the devices. So if I open up a Word document on my PC, and I'm using it from the cloud, assuming you're doing cloud services, right? Because if you're doing it on-premises, right, obviously not all devices can talk to your on-premises file shares. But if you're using a cloud service, say OneDrive, and I'm in a Word document and I'm on page 27, and I close that document and I open it at home on my iPad, guess what page it asks me, do you want to go resume at? Page 27, takes me right back where I was at. And I get that experience exactly where I'm at. It picks me up where I left off. So whether I'm on an iPad, whether I'm doing it from a mobile phone, or whether I'm on a PC or a Mac, well, not the Mac yet, it will pick me up where I've left off, and it'll give me that experience. The software distribution. So when you get to deploy, so our next session when we talk about deploying, Office 365 is just sitting out there on what we call our content delivery network at CDN. It's just out there. We're going to talk about the Office Deployment Toolkit. Everyone here can download the Office Deployment Toolkit now if you want, and then put that on your machine. You can use that toolkit to actually download the full copy of Office. This is the same way you'll do it at your organizations. It's the same way you could do it at home. You can use the ODT. Background updates. So the update process is different. Again, we have a full version of Office coming out every month. So automatically, Office is going to go, I just need to update. Okay, where do I get my updates? You'll define that. And it goes out and it says, here's my updates. And it only does the deltas. So the install of Office is about 800, plus your management or your language packs, about 200. So you're about a gig in size for Office. That delta will be vastly different. So that may only be 100 megs, it may only be 70 megs, it may only be 30 megs, depends on what changes. But we only do the delta differences, and they are cumulative. So each build is a cumulative of the other build. So I don't have to do build A, then build B, then build C to get all the features that I want, because I'm now going to install D. If I'm A and I want to go D, I just do D, and it does all the deltas between the two, and it picks them all up. Because every RTM build of Office is the latest and greatest and has every update from all the others. So it's not one of those things where I have to do the old daisy chaining of updates and patches. Anyone ever had to do that? No? Well, at least someone does, oh yeah. The configuration, it's going to be done through group policy. It can be done through management tools that we know and love, System Center. It can be done by other management tools that we don't know and love, but those all work wonderfully well, right? All partners are great partners. So why is activation important? The activation is important because remember I said you get 5, 5, and 5. So on your 5 PCs, you're going to get the ability to activate Windows or Office on 5 of those devices. So once you install it, when you log in, it's going to ask you to activate. And we're going to do this exercise in lab 2, I believe. And we're going to activate Office. Every 30 days, it goes out and it validates your licenses. So Office, every 30 days, actually, every time you use Office, it goes out and validates your license is still good. If it's unable to communicate to Office, the cloud, for 30 days, it actually falls back into what we call reduced functionality mode. Reduced functionality mode is Word Viewer, PowerPoint Viewer, Excel Viewer, all the viewer modes of the Office products. That's what it falls back to. So we don't prevent you from reading any documents. You can still always open and read documents. We just prevent you from editing them. And part of one of our lab exercises, we'll actually do this, and you'll see the red banner that comes up and says, this is an unlicensed copy. So that's convenient for individuals who have the home use program and your employees leave the company, right? Because most of you don't realize that you are still responsible for getting that copy of Office back from them, because that actually came as a benefit of your enterprise agreement with the company, not the employee. No one ever did it. But when that employee leaves your company, and then in Office 365, you disable that account because you're going to. You're not going to give them security principles to do anything, right? That use flips over to reduced functionality mode. You don't have to go collect that software up anymore. So it automatically collects. I get that question a ton. What happens when this employee leaves? What do I do? Disable their license. You're done. We, you know, the software will take care of it after that. And we actually do a demo. We're actually going to show, I'm going to set the clocks forward on one of my examples of troubleshooting. And we're going to set the clock forward, and we're going to see, I'm going to run this little BB script, and you'll see where it gets to the point where it's like, oh, you're getting up close, here's your warnings, too late, you're done, right? And we'll do all of those. So I'm going to go back. Let's do a demo. It's an exciting demo. Maybe. Of what does Office 365 portal look like with no Office activation? So anyone logged into the admin portal yet? Anyone used the portal? Yep. Okay. Oh, I guess it would help if I switch modes. So here's a list of users. As you can see, the list of users, nobody is provisioned for any services except the CIE admin. So the CIE administrator has been granted licenses. So that person, you'll see, has a license for Office 365, but everyone else is not. So we intentionally, you know, set this to where, you know, that individual did not have licenses. So to enable license, I just assign them a license. I select what language, what region. I grant them a license. I click Save. That person now is an Office 365 user. So this will actually be part of our labs, and we'll do that. So now Aaron is able to log in and consume Office 365. It's part of their default language. So that's what we're going to... Now, I say that, but that assumes that it's been installed, right? Because the language is really mostly for the web browser versions than it's going to be for... Because your rich client version is going to be dependent on your install. And we're going to actually do an example of that. We're going to install the French copy. So if anyone in here doesn't speak French, flip-flop them. Otherwise, you're going to learn it real fast. Yes, sir. I could.
I mean, is it part of any of the labs or anything?
Yes, sir. Actually, it is.
Okay, good.
And so I could run PowerShell, right? Connect, MSO, and then run the, this is just the get-msol user commandlet. And now it'll tell me, you know, who is enabled. So the last version I had, you saw that I just enabled Aaron. But if I scroll up, it'll show you that all those were not enabled. Part of our lab, we're actually going to run a PowerShell command that's going to go through, and it's just going to do a for loop. And it's going to go through and enable all of these for you. So you get to do a couple of PowerShell commands during these labs to set that up. My principal objective was to show you the admin portal and the user portal. So it's portal.office.com. We shortened it, made it friendlier, because most people didn't like typing portal.microsoftonline.com. So it takes you to the same place. But it's easier, just portal.office.com. You will get to know that well, because you're going to use that through your labs today and tomorrow. And then in real life, if you're using Office 365, you'll use that URL also, because that's the same URL you're going to do for everything. And that's the URL you want to teach your users to use. So when they're using a rich client, once it's established, the rich client just works, right? You authenticate, you activate, it just works, right? But when you're using the web client, you're always going to have to authenticate, and you're always going to have to go to some URL, and portal.office.com is that URL. So if there's one URL you want all your users to know, that's it. So you can see Aaron now has access. So, wrong screen. If I go back to my browsers, and go to desktop 2. Launch Word. Word has not been activated. So Word's going to want to come up. It's going to ask me, you know, it's thinking. It's going to pop up and say, all right, I'm not activated. What's your username? What's your password? And it's going to ask me for those. Once I activate it, then I'm in my 30-day window. If I just close the window, I'm in my 5-day window. So anyone who downloads Office gets a free 5 days. Yes, ma'am?
If you activate Word, does it also activate Excel and PowerPoint, or do you have to log into those and activate them?
That's a great question. So the question was, if I activate Word, does it also activate Excel and PowerPoint and all those? I wish it did, but you have to do it like 100 times. No, it does. You do it once, it takes care of all the entire suite. So it passes that through all of them. So all of the Office Aware applications are activated through a single process. So if I do it in Word or Excel or InfoPath, it takes care of the entire portfolio. So you only have to do it once. And then if you connect from any of the other apps, they'll take care of that 30-day issue. So if I'm using Word, and then let's say 14 days from now I use Outlook, right? Then that clock keeps getting updated every time your Office app connects and updates that ticker. So most of us are Outlook users. Anyone here not use Outlook? Yeah, I knew you didn't. But that one's typically always running all the time. The other app that'll be running all the time will be OneDrive. Your OneDrive Sync app will be one of these apps that once you start embracing it, you will have that thing and it'll run all the time. It'll always be ticking in the background. So it's asking me to activate. So I need to put on my glasses because I am old and blind now. So getting old sucks.
Do you still have access to your files in OneDrive if you go past the 30-day validation? Like, if you haven't validated,
that's a great question. So if you're past your 30 days of activation for Office, but your license is still valid, right? So no one has deprovisioned you or disabled your account, then you'll still have access to your files because they're in a different app doing a different thing. Now, the apps that are local on the local machine, they stay resident, right? So that sync process, they stay there. So after 30 days, it's not like they come through and the apps get wiped out. They do not. That's a whole other conversation around MDM and app management and all that stuff. Come see me at Ask the Experts and we can talk through all of that. But your apps do not, or your documents do not get removed. For those who are cloud averse, right? We don't trust the cloud, we don't believe in the cloud, right? I'm not doing the cloud, but I love this Office thing. You can do the Office thing without doing any other part of the cloud. And all your documents can still be on premises, everything can still be on premises, everything still works the same as on premises. The only cloud component you're consuming is Office 365 Pro Plus. Now, we'd encourage you to use all the others because there's huge benefits, especially when you get into all these multiple devices, right? Because you have to have a cloud server. They have to be able to talk to the cloud to get to the document to give that wonderful experience, but it's not a requirement. Here's the part most of you should be up to. Anyone not doing this still? Oh, thank you. Again, I am blind. And my super secret password of pass@. If you've ever done a Microsoft Lab, that's what it looks like. trying to spell something. I picked the wrong one. Oh, transposed. Come on. Come back. Shift-Tab. All right, that was awesome. I'm going to cancel out of that. We're going to pretend that worked. It will work in your lab. They're not dumb like me and misspell everything. And we'll talk about this component in the next session where you can choose to do that or not because it's all about the smoke and mirrors. And we're really big on wasting time while we put it in to production. So by the time you get to say, hey, let's start using Office, it's ready to go. So what is, you know, so we've talked about Office, we've talked about, you know, the various parts that are going to be with Office, we've talked about Pro Plus versus on-premises, but identity is a key part of this. So how does identity come into play? So you have a number of choices when it comes to identity with Office 365. There are two types of identity providers that we use. One that we use with Office 365, one that we can use with partners. The partner component is the Microsoft account. So anyone out there have a Hotmail or a Live or an MSN or any of those type accounts? That's what we call a Microsoft ID. Right? These Microsoft IDs are built for consumer services. So they're built for standard Outlook.com, which is the Hotmail, right? Xbox Live, OneDrive. So are y'all using OneDrive now? You know, free storage, free cloud storage, you get all that? So that's the Microsoft account. The organizational account is an Azure Active Directory instance. Office 365 uses an Azure Active Directory instance. That Azure Active Directory instance can either be cloud-created IDs or they can be directory-synchronized IDs. For our exercise, we're doing directory synchronization, and we're going to do that methodology. Directory synchronization is by far the absolute most popular way of doing it because we're trying to give users an experience and an ID that they're accustomed to, especially when we're tying it to our work IDs. So we want those coupled together, and we'll talk about that in great detail. But that's an Azure Active Directory identity as opposed to a Live ID or a Microsoft ID, as they are called now. So you have three choices with Azure Active Directory. I can do what we call a cloud-only ID. So I manually create the user in the cloud, and I give them a name, and that's how they authenticate. So it's a separate username and password from anything that you would do on premises. So it's not associated to your Active Directory. There's no tie. It's just a cloud ID. So this would be mike@matusik.onmicrosoft.com. Or if I wanted, right, I could do mike@matusik.com if I owned it, right? But it's unrelated to any Active Directory. Then you have an option of doing a synchronized ID. So a synchronized ID gives you the ability to take your on-premises Active Directory and to synchronize your users and groups to the cloud. Now, some individuals and some organizations always go, hold on now. I'm not having you copy all my stuff up to the cloud, right? Because now that's a big vulnerability because all my information is in the cloud. And it's yes, but it's not, right? What we're copying are LDAP attributes from your on-premises Active Directory user object to a brand new user object in the cloud. So these security principles are unrelated. Because I have credentials here doesn't mean I have credentials here. Because I have credentials here, unless I'm doing what I'm about to talk about, I don't have credentials here. They are two separate security principles that we do an association to maintain those. The directory synchronization process allows us to synchronize those things. So Mike becomes Mike, Matusik becomes Matusik, you know, mike@matusik.com becomes my email. mike@matusik.com is my email. mike@matusik.com is my UPN. UPNs are important, right? Everyone know what a UPN is? A user principal name. So most of us log in with the old NTLM kind of domain, WAC username, right? Office 365 doesn't support that. We support UPN, user principal name. Now, the Active Directory's had UPNs in it forever, and everyone's probably stood theirs up. The key point to a UPN is it must be publicly routable. So if your UPN is something.local, right, or something dot, you know, nothing, which you shouldn't be able to do anymore, we fix that. But any of those type of UPNs, you have to fix those. We have a fix ID tool that'll help you fix those. But it must be a publicly routable domain that you own. We're going to validate your domain. You have to own the domain. So you can't just show up and say, hey, I'm Microsoft.com. I own it. We actually do some validation that you own the domain that you want to associate with this. So the directory synchronization associates my on-premises ID with my Office 365 identity. We can provide single sign-on. We'll talk about that here in a second. But we can also do the thing we call password sync. So password sync takes your non-reversible hash. So you already have this in your Active Directory. It's how we store your information. So when you authenticate, you don't actually send us a password, right? You send us a hash. That hash goes through the auth process. That auth process has only write attributes to the hash. So it can't read what the hash is. It just passes, this is what the hash says it is, and passes it in. That process then passes back and goes yes or no. If you're correct, right, here you go, right? We give you your NTLM ticket, and or your Kerberos ticket, and you're in, right? You get your token depending on what protocol you're using, and away you run. If the answer is no, right, then you're prompt with incorrect username or password. Try again. So that methodology hasn't changed. Password sync takes that non-reversible hash, assigns another non-reversible hash to it, and that's what we use in the cloud. So the advantage to doing that is we're giving your users a pseudo single sign-on experience without having to set up a single sign-on infrastructure. So I don't need ADFS, I don't need Okta, I don't need Oracle ID, I don't need Ping Federate, I don't need any of those. BYO SAML, we have an organization here in town who wrote their own SAML provider. That's what they're using. But you have choices when it comes to how you want to do single sign-on. Single sign-on comes into the third phase. By far, this is the largest use case that I have in my customer patch. That's the most popular one. In large enterprise, they choose federated IDs. We do our best to talk them into this one. We lose that conversation, so we just go, okay, use the other one, right? Not that this is insecure, it's not, but they still want to control it, and we're like, all right, cool. So then it's federated IDs. So I still do dirsync, still have to do a dirsync process. Once I'm done doing directory synchronization, what we do is we'll do through a PowerShell command, we'll establish a federated association, so we'll actually set my tenant is now federated to this ID. And that's where this is where that UPN comes in and is important. If my UPN is Microsoft.com, because ours is, when I go to authenticate, it's going to go up and I'm going to pass. And if you guys were here earlier, you saw me when I logged in, right? When I logged in, it hopped me over to the other screen. It hops me over to my ADFS or your STS of choice and gives me that screen to where now I'm providing my credentials. That was all done on premises. That was owned by Microsoft. So the reverse of that would, if you're using Office 365 and you're doing federated authentication, what will happen is your user will come to us and say, you know, I am Mike, and I'm going to just say AMD because they're right there. I am Mike at AMD.com. We'll go, oh, AMD.com is actually a federated ID. I'm going to pass authentication back to their STS, Secure Token Server, ADFS. Right, we give one away for free. And then ADFS is responsible for doing the authentication process. We're actually out of the game. Once ADFS authenticates, they pass the SAML claim back to us. We go, hey, great, welcome aboard, Mike. Here's access to all your information. That is owned and operated by the customer on-premises. That's not something we do. Password Sync gives you something you don't have to deploy for single sign-on experience. I mean experience, I'm doing air quotes for those who are, you know, on the interweb. Federation, it's a true federated process. You own authentication, and then you pass it back to us. Any questions around those? All right, question?
For synchronized identity, how long does it take for the cloud sync to catch up with the password change?
Great question. So the question was, how long does a password change process get to the cloud? So with DIR sync, without password sync enabled, it happens every 3 hours. DIR sync with password sync enabled, it happens every 3 minutes. So every 3 minutes we go, got any updates? Nope. You have to remember, DIR sync is a push process. You push to us. This is not something we pull from you. You push to us. So we don't have a, you know, super secret backdoor into your network, right? You're pushing data to us. When the password changes, you're going to push that new hash to us. That will happen every 3 minutes. However, nobody's TTL on their certificate, right, for their claim is going to be 3 minutes. I hope nobody sets their TTL to 3 minutes, right? Because if you do your ADFS or whatever STS you do, it's going to be real busy. I'd highly recommend multiple processors and a big network. So any questions around that? You need another one?
Yeah, this thing's like spinning for like 30 minutes.
Right, that's why I had to start early. Thanks for paying attention, though. He's Microsoft, so I can heckle him. So what does the cloud identity model look like? Kind of like we've described already, right? It's user, ID. No association. It's username, passwords, right here. They are unrelated to anything else. What does DIR sync bring in? Well, DIR sync the verb, as opposed to DIR sync the noun. That's why we renamed DIR sync to AAD sync. DIR sync the verb is the process of taking your on-premises attributes for user objects and making disabled user objects in the cloud that have the same attributes. Different security principles, different SIDs, unrelated security-wise, but have the same look and feel. And then DIR sync the noun is the tool that we're going to do in the lab. We'll actually do the DIR sync tool. Question?
Maybe outside of this session, but if you use the DIR sync tool, do all your accounts over your 365 tenant or whatever.
Right.
Do you have to have the domain figure to match the UPN, or can just copy the UPN as the attribute in the user?
So the question was, if I have DIR sync running and I have a UPN on premises, does it have to match my UPN in the cloud?
Yeah, like domain name, you set up your domain.
Mm-hmm. So the answer to that is your UPNs, and you can have any that you own, be the UPNs for your authentication process, but you'll need an STS instance for every one of those UPN suffixes. So if I'm, you know, mike@matusik.com, and I also have cindy@gollier.com, and I have Derek@jones.com, but they're all owned under my single forest, then I'm going to have 3 STS instances to accommodate the 3 different UPN suffixes, but they'll all work just fine. You'll establish each one of those by name, and that's why I emphasize it has to be a routable domain that you own. Right? So if you've picked something, right? Because in the past, we got pretty creative, like we were talking about this morning, right? We'd Star Wars characters, you know, Looney Tunes characters. You know, I used to have Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner and all those server names. That's a bad thing now, right? They have to be publicly routable. So, that answer your question? No? Yeah? Maybe? Okay, cool. So am I boring you to tears yet? So your domain controller, DirSync will talk to your domain controller. DirSync should be deployed inside your network, right? Because you don't want to be cracking open authentication processes or, you know, synchronization processes into your DMZ. So this would be inside your network and then just pass through, right? So everything's done in a secure fashion. Everything we do is done on 443 or an other SSL port, right? We use SSL and TLS for everything. There are two things that we don't use secure protocol for. The CRL, certificate replication list, because, you know, you kind of have to, right? It's the base on it. And then the auto discover in Outlook. Everything else is always hops over to an SSL-based port. So, and then even auto discover goes, oh, you're ready to go, and then flips you to an SSL-based lookup. How many DirSync servers should I have? Answer to that is one per domain. So if you have multiple namespaces, you know, you may do multiple name services depending on how you've got it constructed, but in reality, you just need one. SQL Express versus full SQL. This gets into how big is your Active Directory. How many users and groups do you have? If you have more than 500,000, we recommend you use SQL as the back end for DirSync or AD Sync. The reason we do that is because SQL Express caps out at a 10 gigabyte database. So we've kind of figured over time that more than 500,000 objects causes SQL Express to hit its limit and then it stops. So if you have a large Active Directory or a large organization, then we highly recommend you use SQL as your back end. You do not need to make this highly available. DirSync is not a critical process. It is on the first sync, right? But after that, it's not a critical process. DirSync can be down for months, assuming you're not doing password sync, right? And as long as you didn't hire or fire anyone in months, it's not a big deal, right? DirSync wouldn't impact. Because all DirSync is doing is saying, I'm taking Mike and I'm making Mike. And as long as Mike is still at the company, Mike hasn't changed, there's no update to Mike. Nothing has changed. So it's not a critical process. What we do provide, though, is we've provided the ability to do DirSync through Azure. So some organizations embrace this because they, you know, if DirSync goes down, it's going to be down. And more often than not, it's not based on DirSync. It's really based on ADFS or their STS of choice. I'll just use ADFS from now on. If ADFS goes down, you're down. Right? You own authentication. You've already set your own authentication. ADFS goes down, you're down. So you put it in Azure, right? Then you know, the likelihood that all of Azure goes down is pretty small. Could happen. Computers, right? Anything can happen. But it's highly unlikely. If you're an organization who's only on the coast and you have hurricane issues and, Azure's probably a good place to put these processes. It's just infrastructure as a service. It's just a VM. You create a VPN network with us through Azure and let it do its thing. It's not a chatty process. It's not consume a lot of processing time in Azure. AAD Sync is the new version of DirSync. So AAD Sync is based on the latest and greatest version of FIM, which is now MIM, Microsoft Identity Manager, which used to be Forefront Identity Manager. Now we've deprecated the Forefront name on everything. It's basically based on that. The client, and through the exercises, will actually do this. You'll open up the MIIS executable. So that takes you back some time, right? So MIIS. And then MIIS became ILM, and then ILM became FIM, and then FIM became MIM. That's the life cycle of identity management at Microsoft. The all of those. People at home are like, what the heck was that? Takes care of all of those processes. So big thing to know, SQL Express for small organizations, big organizations, use a real SQL. In the labs, we'll be doing SQL Express. So with DirSync, you have the ability to do some filtering. So let's say I don't want to put my entire Active Directory in. I just want to do based on a particular OU. So through DirSync, I can specify what OUs I want to do. With AAD Sync, you can actually specify a particular attribute that causes you to synchronize to the cloud or not. So some organizations, you know, have various rules based on certain work that they do or certain contract services they provide. They don't want certain identities going to the cloud. Understandable, right? You can either do that based on an OU, right, and then separate those off, or you may do those based on an attribute. If it's going to be an attribute-based, then AAD Sync is going to be the tool. Or you can use full FIM, Forefront Identity Manager. There's a free connector you just download and install, which looks exactly like AAD Sync. Shocking. And then that would be the tool that provides that synchronization process. So do you need to back up FIM and DirSync or AAD Sync? Not really. Because if it goes down, you just create a new one. The recovery process is just stand up a new one. The reason we can say just stand up a new one, because we do this process we call hard match, soft match. So the hard match for all your user objects, right, and here's where I'm going to get real nerdy on you. On-premises, we take your object GUID. So every object GUID is unique in every Active Directory. We take that object GUID. We do a base64 encoding, so it's not a super secret encoding methodology. It's just a base64 encoding. And that becomes the source anchor attribute in the SQL Express directory. The source anchor attribute then becomes the immutable ID attribute in Office 365 in Azure Active Directory. Because we know that, if someone on premises gets married, that no part of their object, right, has been modified to update the immutable ID. So because they've changed their last name, it's okay. It flows through and it updates. We don't have to do soft matches based on an SMTP or some other attribute. We can just do those matches. So that's why it doesn't matter if I just tear one down and I stand one up. Because if I stand up a new instance, and as soon as it runs, it's going to use the same base64 encoding of the GUID object, which is going to exactly match the source anchor attribute in the MIS directory, FIM directory, right? And then that's going to tie directly to the immutable ID. That becomes a hard match. If those are broken, right, then we soft match based on like an SMTP address, those type things, because those are always supposed to be unique. But way more than you ever wanted to know. So this slide is incorrect because we have fixed a couple of the things. The Azure AD Sync can now do password sync. So originally it could not, now it can. Right, and the Azure AD Sync does provide a capability DirSync cannot do beyond just the attribute filtering. It can also do, I only want to sync the properties for Exchange. So I'm only going to use Exchange Online. I'm not going to do these other things. So I'm not going to synchronize the link attributes and the SharePoint attributes and any of those other attributes for the Active Directory. I'm only going to do the Exchange ones. And it's actually brings up a checkbox, and you say, I want to synchronize these accounts, but I only want to synchronize these LDAP properties, and you pick. Some organizations, that's huge for them. They do not want all of their, what we call the productivity attributes, so link, SharePoint, and Exchange, replicating to the cloud. So you can choose those with AAD Sync. You cannot choose that with DirSync. DirSync sends them. It's not a risk that we see, or I should say I see, but some do, and you have choices to set that. That was actually a very popular request from our customers who work in highly secure, highly regulated environments, that you know they're concerned anytime any bit of information leaves their firewall, right, that they have to deal with that. We do accommodate all of those type customers also. So when we get into the components where we start talking about the security. That becomes a very popular conversation. So I was talking earlier, see, I can choose, right, which attributes I want to replicate, because AAD Sync gives me those capabilities. So Fast Track is our friend. So I talked about earlier where we can go into Fast Track, right, or we can walk in to or go to the portal, and we can set these up automatically. Through our labs, we'll actually be setting this up from the portal. We'll just click on a link in the portal, and it'll go through, and they'll set it up for us. Fast Track is everyone's friend, because Fast Track is automating all of these processes. So as you've heard earlier in our keynote, where we talk about how, you know, we used to have people who sit around and they do these tasks, right? And we all did a lot of tasks. Well, we're automating a huge set of those tasks, so we don't have to sit there and try to do simple tasks, right? We're all highly compensated critical thinkers, right? We're all in IT. That's what we are, right? Everyone in the room's fairly well compensated. Everyone here is critical thinker, because if you weren't, you wouldn't be in this industry. But a lot of us spend most of our day not doing critical thinking. We're doing tasks. So automating those tasks gives us the ability to start do critical thinking, which most people, when I have this conversation with, they all go, hold on now. You know, you saying this stuff, I'm going to be out of work. No, you're not. Your job doesn't change. I was like, anyone remember when the virtualization came about and everyone was freaked out that, oh, we're going to go virtualization. VMware is going to put me out of a job. VMware didn't change your job, right? Unless you were the guy who physically racked and stacked the hardware server, right? That person, yeah, a couple of them got laid off, right? I'll be honest, a couple of them got laid off. But beyond that, you know, everyone else's job is the same. Excuse me? Yeah, there you go, yeah. Then we had to hire people to come in and run all the virtualization. So it's the same process, right? Fast Track helps take a lot of these tasks that we're talking about and enabling it and working through it. So fasttrack.office.com is a wonderful URL. Federated IDs, so we've kind of been talking through this. And I guess I need to speed up because we're into lab time. The federated ID, so DirSync, makes my security principles on-premises, cloud, right? ADFS does authentication. You own it. We pass it back to you. You're responsible for it. User authentication experience feels the same. When you're on-premises and you're doing ADFS or another SDS, typically they never get prompted for another username and password, because you already have it, because you've already logged into Active Directory. So that gets passed through and it happens seamlessly. When you're off network, typically they're going to get prompted again, because your ADFS server is not going to already have your Kerberos ticket. And it's going to go, I don't know who you are, right? And it's not going to do that. So you're going to get prompted for their username and password. But it's going to be the same username and password.
How long is that token for?
Yeah. How long is your token for what? For Kerberos or for... So most TTLs on Kerberos are set to 8 hours, but you control that. That's user configurable. It's still the same, but typically during the proxy auth for ADFS, it won't accept your claim. So it'll automatically prompt you for username and password. But you'll get that experience through the app, not through the Office apps. Your Office apps, we're going to get into that, right? They don't check that often, and it doesn't really matter. That does matter when you go into a SharePoint site, because that's a web browser based, right? And that's going to need a username and password now. So, and the reason I bring that up is because I get that question a lot. When I'm on premises, I get this experience, but when I'm at home, I get this other experience. And it's that way because, remember, on-premises, you're behind your firewall. You've already authenticated to your domain. You already have your Kerberos ticket. We already know who you are. So when you go to do the authentication process back and forth with ADFS, it already goes, oh, you're Mike. There you go. But when you're not on-premises, you're at home or you're at Starbucks or you're at McDonald's and you do that process, we don't know who you are, right? We don't have a Kerberos ticket. right? And we make you authenticate again. Question? Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so directory synchronization is creating LDAP attributes, has nothing to do with authentication. Now I'm going to get into jazz hands, right? So directory synchronization is user objects, not authentication. Authentication is ADFS or an STS or password sync or some other methodology. So, but they're unrelated but related. I have to be an identity, but my authentication is done through a different process. Right. Like I said, I can have dirsync off, and ADFS will still work, and everything still runs and operates just fine. But if I turn ADFS off, I'm dead in the water because I can't authenticate. Now we have a trick for that, too, in the cloud. You can just revert all IDs to be cloud-only IDs, but then you have to give them all passwords. Unless you're doing password sync, then it's not an issue. All right, let's jump to the lab, because I have pretty much burned up all my time. So let's go ahead. Everyone lab set up? Anyone have any errors yet? You have an error? Okay, I'll play Proctor and try to fix it. But everyone else, their lab's good. Have you started your labs? No, nobody started their labs. Nobody's cheated yet. I assumed IT people usually don't wait it through. They kind of, all right, screw it, I'm going. Go ahead, start the lab. Only do lab one. And then when it's over, take a break. And then we start the next session at some time. And we'll get started with doing the deployments.